Welcome to the Simple Money, Simple Life podcast. I am Matt Erickson, and I'm your host. This is a podcast where we explore how simplicity beats complexity, especially in money matters. We explore investing, personal finance, and how to live a simple and awesome life. Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 77, titled Declutter Yourself. And I have a lot to talk about today, so today's podcast may be a little longer than usual, just because I have a lot of topics on my mind, and I'm not recording as often due to certain factors, so it seems like I'm dropping into a pace of doing a couple of these a month. And so this podcast today will have just a lot of ideas that I've been thinking about. The first thing I wanted to talk about is about decluttering ourselves. So I was talking to my brother today, and he was telling me about a former coworker of his that was, he had some rental properties, he had a house, he had cars, he had kind of typical stuff. And he had a job that he felt was stressful, and around in his mid-50s, he just decided that he had had enough of the rat race and the stress. And he decided to liquidate most of his assets. He sold his house. He sold most of his belongings. He sold some of his rental properties, sold one of his cars, and moved into one of the apartments that he owned in his real estate portfolio. I think he sold some of them as well, but he kept some and chose to live in one and move to a different town and retire from his job. And so he just decided to liquidate, consolidate, condense, and live a simpler, more kind of slow-paced life. And I guess it's worked out really well for this guy. So he just said that his possessions were weighing him down and they were adding stress to his life. Taking care of a yard was adding stress to his life. Taking care of his properties and his house and everything was adding stress to his life. So his answer to that was just let a lot of it go and live a simpler house with fewer possessions. So there's a lot of ways we can declutter ourselves, and like I have mentioned before, there's a lot of research to indicate that clutter and too much stuff tends to increase the cortisol levels in our bodies, which is a stress hormone. And so just being around a lot of stuff and a lot of clutter can elevate the stress in us as people. So I thought I would talk about some possible ideas about, now that it's springtime, a lot of people like to do spring cleaning, how you might be able to declutter yourself, your world, your possessions, excuse me, your house, your surroundings. So one thing I do, kind of, I read a lot of books, and my wife does as well. She reads more of the digital books. I tend to try to find deals on Amazon and buy the hard books. I just like those. And what I'll do is, so when I read my books, if it's a book that I know I want to read again, then I will keep it. If it's a book that I have no interest in reading again, then sometimes I will take notes on it and have it in my note application on my iPhone, and then I will either give it away, typically give it away. And so my philosophy is, if I'm never going to read it again, why would I put it on my shelf? A lot of people keep a huge library of books in their home, because they have the what if I need this again syndrome going on. And another part that sometimes people have going on is they want to unconsciously show the world how smart they are by how many books they have, and that if they reduce their library, therefore they'll lose that knowledge and not be able to show off how intelligent they are. And so I would propose that if it's a book you're never going to read again, let it go. There's other things that can be really better decorations in your house typically than books. And so, especially with the idea of that knowledge that you have from the book could be passed on to someone else. So another thing is our wardrobe. I think it's a really good time of year to go through your wardrobe. If you have not worn your clothes, a clothing item for over a year, I would suggest you donate it and let it go. And one kind of way to do this is to turn all your hangers one way, and then, you know, 3 months later, 6 months later, the hangers that haven't changed are the things that you know you can let go of that you haven't worn. And so most Americans have probably 70% too much clothing in their closets, in my opinion, and are things that they don't really wear very often or don't even like. So many people, for psychological and emotional reasons, hold on to their clothes thinking, oh, when I lose some weight and I fit back into this, I will wear this. But what that really does is add stress to your life and is just sitting there kind of lurking and peering at you saying, hey, you're too overweight to wear me anymore. And so I suggest you let go of those items. You could always repurchase them later. Most people wear about 20% of their wardrobe. And so again, it's an opportunity to give that stuff to someone who will actually wear it and who could use it. Another thing that a lot of Americans have way too much of are towels and bedding. And so I would suggest you go through your closets and, you know, I think keeping, depending on how many people are in your family, 5 to 10 towels is usually plenty, but some people have upwards of 20 or more towels, and typically that's not necessary. Bedding as well. Oftentimes people hold on to bedding that doesn't even fit their mattresses anymore, and that would be a great thing to let go of too. Another thing is toys. So as your children grow, sometimes parents, for sentimental reasons, want to hold on to the toys. Sometimes they want to hold on to them so their grandkids in 20 years can play with them. I would suggest, again, it's an opportunity to give to someone else who could use those toys now with their children. And so find a family with younger kids or someone in the neighborhood or on Facebook Marketplace to be able to give those toys away to children who could use them or need them. Another one is kids' books. We had a large collection of children's books. My wife and I read a lot to our kids when they were younger, and we did, instead of holding on to those to read to our grandkids or to pass them down to our kids so they could have them for their kids, we decided to donate them to families who could use them now. And if we want to get more books in the future, we can always buy some at garage sales, or we could get them from the library. So they're easy to reacquire. Another thing people have tons of in their homes are pens and pencils and crayons and markers. And really, how many pens do you really need? Most people have these large cups and drawers full of pens that they've picked up at free places or that have advertisements on them. I would suggest you go through and reduce your pen collection. They take up a lot of space in drawers and closets and could be let go. Also, this one's for the ladies, makeups. I know that many women have way more makeup than they use, and a lot of it is outdated, dried up, expired, not really stuff they use anymore. So I think it would be awesome to go through your cupboards in your bathroom and let go of some of the stuff that's no good anymore or you don't use. And I think every time you go to that space to get ready in the morning, you will feel lighter and better. I think another thing we can do to declutter ourselves is to let go of perfectionistic ideas and concepts about trying to be our ideal self, or allowing old themes that we were maybe internalized as children around guilt and I have to be better, or I have to be more driven, I have to be more successful. Let's let those ideas go and just kind of let them pass by and not cling on to them and hold those thoughts tightly. I don't think those are helpful, and I think it's a great way to declutter ourselves. Another thing you can do is to get rid of outdated foods and spices in your house that have expired in your storage or in your cupboards or in your pantry. One other thing is the baby stuff, like changing tables and cribs and other things that babies use once you're done having kids and your kids are grown. Again, I think it's a wonderful idea to give those away to parents who could really use them, who are starting from scratch. I was talking to someone recently who is pregnant with their first baby, and they've been able to fill the whole nursery with changing table, crib, and everything for under $50 because of generous people who are selling things for a low price and giving them things. I think another thing we can consider, if you happen to be in the phase of life where you might want to downsize or whatnot, is to do what my brother's friend did, which is to just decide to downsize and sell your house and sell your possessions and downsize to a smaller place and focus more on experiences and travel. I think it's another way to declutter ourselves is to dismiss sloppy and bad habits from our life. such as smoking or drinking too much alcohol, too much soda, or too much screen time, or just whatever habit that you might have that is not helpful for you and does not bring you happiness. I think it's an opportunity as we declutter some of our things. For example, some people keep equipment of old hobbies that they never will engage in again. It might be a guitar. It might be a musical instrument. It might be a piano. It might be baseball bats. It could be tennis rackets. It could be fill in the blank of things we used to do with no intentions of returning to that. We can give those things away to someone who actually is interested in that hobby and allow them to do it instead of having it just kind of sitting there reminding us that we should be doing this hobby or I should be getting back into that. Let those go and let someone else have them. And maybe consider adopting hobbies that are good for you but don't require many tools or equipment and have very easy entry points such as walking or jogging, pickleball, hiking, swimming, listening to books or podcasts, reading, mindfulness, yoga, knitting, paddleboarding, kayaking. There's so many cool hobbies that where you can either rent the equipment or you just need very little to get into it and very low cost as well. Another way to declutter yourself is to simplify your financial accounts. If you have 5 401ks from past employers, bring them together and put them into a rollover IRA. I did that recently, like I mentioned, and it was very easy. It was very smooth. It's wonderful to have your accounts consolidated into one easy place. It just takes a lot off the mind to know that it's all in one place. So if you have too many bank accounts, you have too many investing accounts, it's so easy to consolidate nowadays. Find the one platform that you like the best. I consolidated mine into my Fidelity account and it's been great. So another topic I'd like to talk just a minute about is about an article that I read by, let's see if I can find it. Okay, it's called So What If Everyone Else Is Doing It by Joshua Becker. He runs a site called Becoming Minimalist. He has thousands of followers, but I would like to read a short article that he wrote just because I think it is interesting. He writes, the age-old parenting wisdom goes something like this. If all of your friends jumped off a bridge, would you jump too? The classic cliche utilized by parents everywhere since the invention of bridges is meant to motivate young minds to think for themselves. Most of us, as teenagers, simply shrugged it off as stupid advice. Obviously, I'm thinking of myself. How insulting to say that I'm only following along with the crowd is probably what we said to ourselves. The older we get, the less it seems people speak this advice into our decisions. But that's okay. The older we get, the less likely we are to be persuaded by others into foolish decisions, right? Wrong. We are just as likely to follow the crowd. In fact, there is a term for this tendency to follow the crowd, groupthink. According to Psychology Today, groupthink is a phenomenon that occurs when a group of well-intentioned people makes irrational or non-optimal decisions spurred by the urge to conform or the belief that dissent is impossible. Non-optimal decisions spurred by the urge to conform. I think we all need to be reminded from time to time that just because everyone around us may be making non-optimal decisions, we don't need to as well. Conformity isn't a value to be pursued if the group is moving in the wrong direction. Consumer debt in the U.S. has now reached $15 trillion. Americans spend 3.1 hours per day watching television, 2.5 hours per day on social media, and 2.4 hours per day playing video games. According to the Mayo Clinic, 97.3% of Americans live an unhealthy lifestyle. The average American home contains 300,000 items, 10.6% of us rent an off-site storage unit, and we continue to spend an average of $1,497 per month on non-essential items. 66% of American workforce is disengaged at work, 85% of Americans suffer from low self-esteem, and 77% of us admit spending time and resources on less important pursuits at the expense of things that matter most to us. The desire to conform is not leading us as individuals in the best direction for our lives and families. But there is good news. Just because everyone else is jumping off a bridge doesn't mean you have to. You get to choose the best path for your life. You don't have to watch the same shows as everyone else. You don't have to buy the same things or shop the same sales. You don't have to eat unhealthy, endlessly scroll social media, or hate your job. You never have to sacrifice your greatest values and passions for the purpose of conformity. So what if everyone else is doing it? We get to choose our own life. And so that's the end of Joshua's article that I wanted to share with you. I'd like to transition. I know I'm popping from topic to topic, but I have a topic I'd like to go over real quick. And this, I got an email from a listener named Boyd, who we exchange emails quite a bit. And he is a really savvy person and a really savvy investor. And he's gone through a lot of market downturns and he's managed to stay the course. So right now in May of 2022, we're right on the cusp of a bear market, which means when the market is down 20% or more. If it's less than 20%, it's called a correction. So we're right at that 20% mark, ready to possibly go into a bear market. The days have kind of been negative, all in sequentially, like the stock market is red every day and it's going down and down. And so during these times of market volatility and a lot of negative press, such as Russia and Ukraine, and that stocks are expensive, they have high PE ratios, bonds are yielding very little, and cash is still yielding very little, and inflation is kind of running out of control. A lot of people have the mindset, oh, this time is different, therefore I need to sell my investments and go to cash before I lose it all. Now, the thing we need to remember is that mindset prevails almost every single time we have a moment like this. It happened last year, March of 2020, during the COVID crisis, where we went into a short bear market. Our investments rebounded within a couple months of that short bear market. We never know how long or what is going to happen, but what we do know is history teaches us that markets do recover. They do need to go through a trimming process sometimes as stocks get too expensive and they trim the process and we have to go through a downstretch. That's just the price we pay to be in stocks. If not, the 10% return that we typically get, everyone would be in it if it were an easy ride. There has to be some volatility to weed out the people who can't stick with it. So I'm going to read you Boyd's email just because I think it's super wise and something we all need to remember right now. He said, "Hey Matt, I'm looking at my portfolio and ouch, big downturn. The lower balance hurts. Down in value almost 70,000 year to date. I'm thinking, gee, that's money I could have spent in a few years. This is terrible. How could this happen? I must sell, sell, sell. The sky is falling. Putin's going to send a nuke. The bird flu is here. This time is different. Where's the nearest window? I'm going to jump. But I've trained my primitive brain to ignore these short-term negative results because I know in a few months or maybe years, Mr. Market will come back, sometimes in a wonderful and aggressive way. If I sell now, I'd be shooting myself in the foot and miss out on big gains. A good topic for your show at this time of stock market decline might be a mention of the psychology of loss aversion, where our brain experiences twice the emotion associated with a loss compared to an equal gain. We tend to remember better any loss, whether it be material, a loved one, or financial. As a result, our mind is hardwired to avoid future losses, and we can become timid, skeptical, untrusting, and avoid any risk or volatility. But if we plan on being a good investor, we must wrap our brains around the subject of loss aversion. It is your mind playing tricks on you. Don't let it happen. Realize that the greatest risk is not investing. If you put your money under the mattress or in bank savings, inflation will destroy that money by about 3% per year, currently 8.5%. The only way to come out ahead is to get those funds invested. The average return of the stock market beats inflation over time. It's so sad to see others being safe and missing out on the magical power of compounded gains over time. I've seen this with neighbors and family, coworkers, and time again. Their automatic response is, oh, investing is gambling. Well, maybe crazy crypto or day trading is gambling, but not buy and hold investing. Buy and hold investing is a collection of tax-advantaged index funds spread across the world and market caps with a value tilt can make you very wealthy. I like the quote from Warren Buffett, if you don't learn how to make money while you sleep, you will work until you die. Truth. When I go to sleep or not at work, it is very comforting to know that I am working. My money works for me. So to manage your loss aversion, we must realize some things. One, the market will drop 20%, 25% of the time. It's okay. The volatility is normal and I believe a wonderful thing. Volatility has its advantages like dollar cost averaging or strategic tax moves on Roth conversions. Stocks return on average over the decades about 10% a year compared to 3% inflation. So time is your friend. Google the term loss aversion. Learn about it, manage it, don't let fear control you. And when your portfolio drops by hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands, just smile and dump more in because stocks are on sale. You like a good sale, right? Invest like a robot. Use your brain, not emotions. No fear, no greed. Don't worry, be happy. Boyd. So I love this email from Boyd because it comes at just an important time where the market is all over the place. It's kind of crazy, and it's a time when a lot of people panic and sell and sit on the sidelines in their cash because they don't want to lose more money. My hope, and I'm not an investment advisor, none of this is advice, it's just friendly information from a podcaster and a friend, is to don't look. Don't. One thing Jack Bogle said, who founded Vanguard, is don't peek. Don't do something, just stand there. That's what he would say. So it's important to not, during the market downturns and the corrections and bear markets, it's best just not to look at your investments and just keep dollar cost averaging into the market with every paycheck. Lastly, I would like to share, I got a letter from a place here in Logan that where I used to have my investments when I was in my low 20s. And I got my investments out of there, thank goodness. And they send out a client relationship summary to all their clients. And I'm still on their mailing list, so they sent this to me. And I just wanted to read this because there's so many financial advisors out there who do not have your best interest at heart. They may be super friendly guys or gals. They may be really nice. They may be good friends. But at the same time, they're putting their interests ahead of yours. So I'm going to read a few things from their letter. It says, what you pay will depend on the services and investments you choose. Most fees will be based on a percentage of your investments, so we will have an incentive to increase the assets you have with us. You will pay fees and costs whether you make or lose money on your investments. Fees and costs will reduce any amount of money you make on your investments over time. Please make sure you understand what fees and costs you are paying. So far, so good. That's an honest, good statement, because financial advisors need to make money and there's going to be fees attached to it. Okay, this is where it gets interesting. He says, all fees and costs related to brokerage services are described in detail in the prospectus and account agreement for the specific mutual fund or variable annuity. These fees can include upfront charges, ongoing service fees or trail commissions, deferred sales charges, annual custodial or contract fees, administrative fees, etc. So basically, they hide a lot of those fees, but they have to put it in writing legally to tell you that they're doing that. Then they write, most advisory services include fees based on the assets in your account, though we can also offer services through a flat fee or hourly rate. Underlying investment will have their own built-in expenses and transaction costs in addition to the fee you pay us. Advisory accounts are also subject to certain additional fees and costs. So that paragraph was fine, but then it goes on to say, let's see. We also strive to help you invest successfully to reach your financial goals. When we provide you with a recommendation as your broker-dealer or act as your investment advisor, we have to act in your best interest and not put our interest ahead of yours. So they say that in the one line. And now listen to this. At the same time, the way we make money creates some conflicts with your interests. You should understand and ask us about these conflicts because they can affect the recommendations and investment advice we provide you. Here are some examples. Most mutual funds and annuities pay us ongoing service fees called 12B1 fees or trail commissions and upfront commissions, creating an incentive for us to recommend these investments. So I'm going to stop there for a minute. So on the one hand, they're saying they want to be a fiduciary and act in your best interest. And right in the next paragraph, they say they will put you in products that have 12B1 fees, trailing commissions, and upfront commissions, which gives them an incentive to put you into that thing because they will benefit from it, such as variable annuities, for example, which is something they mentioned earlier, which have tremendous commissions and are great for the person selling them, not so great for the person buying them. They also say, in some of our investment advisory service accounts, we pay transaction cost when trading certain share classes or mutual funds or when buying or selling stock. This creates an incentive for us to limit trading or to use different share classes which do not have transaction fees. So that part is actually good. So they have so much of this that's good and then mixed in with a bunch of nonsense. And they basically say, we have a conflict of interest and sometimes we will put our interests ahead of yours by putting you into products that include commission rich products for us and things that will be better for us than you. So these guys send me this letter and I'm like, you have got to be kidding me that I would ever in a million years invest with you and your brokerage. They're really nice guys there. The people I know that are still working there, but there's no way I would turn my money over to a company like that because they have so many ulterior motives and they do not put your interests first in each situation. Anyway, I went a little long today, but those were some thoughts I had on my mind. I hope you guys are having a great springtime, getting out and enjoying the wonderful weather and the beautiful creations around you, the trees, the flowers, the birds, the animals. It's an awesome time of year. Go out and enjoy it. And remember, the simple life is a good life.